Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Patrick Heather, a good friend who's Senior Research Fellow at the Natural Gas Programme at the OIES, to discuss the Institute's recently published comment, European Traded Gas Hubs, the Supremacy of TTF. Now, just to time mark this podcast recording, we're actually recording it on the 1st of June 2020, when oil prices were $37.50 per barrel, European gas prices, that's TTF, were $1.14 per MMBTU at the opening of the business, and Asian spot prices are $2.05 per MMBTU. Patrick, great to have you here. Thank you for joining us on this podcast recording. Specifically on your comment, which I have to say I really enjoyed reading, and I urge our listeners to read that. But you start the comment by noting that the paper provides an update on the previous work on this subject and specifically looks at the results of the analysis trading data in 2019 for the European traded gas hubs, especially, of course, the Dutch TTF hub. But before we start on the specifics of this paper, could you give our listeners some background as to basically how we got here?
Yes, well, thank you, David, and thank you for that introduction. It's a pleasure to be here and to do this podcast. I've been following the development of the European Traded Hubs for over 10 years now and have already published a number of papers and insights on the subject, all available on the OIES website, free to download, beautiful plug. But I'd like to point out that if people want to look at the history and are interested, I wrote a detailed account of the liberalisation of the British market back in 2010. 2012 was an overview of the continental European hubs. A major paper in 2015 on the evolution of those European traded gas hubs with a lot of detail right across the whole of Europe. And then there were various other papers focusing on Spain, Italy, whatever. But last year, I wrote an update, Insight, A Decade of Change, it was called, showing how the hubs had changed one relative to the other. And we were probably going to leave it at that. But in fact, 2019 saw yet another step change, in particular with the TTF hub. And we felt it necessary to write this comment. And also because this comment introduces for the first time, I mean, I did write an article in Q1 2019 quarterly about global churn rates. But in this paper, this comment, I analyze it a little bit further. And we'll, I guess, talk about that in this podcast. So this comment provides a further update and we'll look at the results. It does look at the results of the analysis of trading data in 2019 for the European traded gas hubs, whilst also considering the importance of the Dutch TTF, not only as a national hub, but also as a European and global pricing benchmark.
Interesting. But certainly, and I you know, we know there, in fact, you know, we all think of TTF and NBP as the main hubs, but there are, in fact, numerous hubs in Europe. And your paper categorizes them as mature, active, poor, and also inactive. Can you tell us about them and which ones we should focus on?
Yes, I've been ranking the various traded hubs in Europe since 2015. That paper was the first time I gave a ranking following the results of what I call the five key elements. And back in the early 2010s, the NBP was by far the most liquid, indeed mature hub. And as the first traded gas hub in Europe, because the British market liberalised way back in 1996, its progress was keenly followed by the European Commission, who wanted to liberalise the energy markets across all member states. Today, it is the TTF that leads the rankings and is the only other mature traded gas hub in Europe. People who have seen my work, my papers, my presentations at conferences, etc., may be aware of my very colourful map of Europe showing the various hubs. I use bright colours following, broadly speaking, a traffic light system, green, orange, red. The mature hubs are in dark green. They are, then have active hubs, poor hubs, and illiquid hubs as inactive hubs, as you say. the two German hubs, the NCG and the gas pool, the Austrian VTP and the Italian PSV, are ranked as active. So second tier, if you like, to the mature. The two Belgian hubs, the Brugge ZTP with the French TRF and the Spanish PVB and Czech VOB, are ranked as poor. All the other hubs across Europe, I rank as inactive. It doesn't mean to say they do not trade. It's just that they don't really, on a relative scale, they don't really feature very much. However, they are all important as balancing hubs, if only to satisfy the EU's gas market directives.
Interesting. Well, look, you've used the expression mature hub and you've used liquid as well. But my question is, how do you measure which are the most liquid? You know, is it volume? Is it churn rate? Because I note in your paper you have concerns over the way that the European Commission calculates its churn rate. And I wondered whether you can explain that further. You know, how do you do it?
I think maybe concerns is a little extreme in that expression, but I'll explain in a minute. But I analyse five metrics, the five key elements, in order to arrive at my results. But certainly, traded volumes and the churn rates are possibly two of the most significant of those metrics. Just as the saying goes that a picture paints a thousand words, then the absolute trading volumes show at a glance how relatively active a given hub is. Right. The churn rate is the metric that encapsulates all of the others, as if there are many participants, they're trading many different products in large quantities, then it goes without saying that the churn rate is likely to be quite important, and this one metric can give an idea of how liquid and mature a market is. For reference, a commodity market is deemed to be mature if its churn rate is 10 times or greater. And also, I believe that the speculators and the trade houses would rather trade in markets with a churn rate greater than 12. So that gives us our sort of threshold, the metric they're looking for. And I call a hub mature if it's 10 times or greater. You ask about the different methodologies in calculating the churn. So let's come on to that. First of all, the churn rate of a commodity is the total traded volume divided by the total physical consumption. However, in the gas world, things are a little more complicated, especially in Europe, which has a history of long-term contracted gas being transited from Russia or Norway, the Netherlands, to other countries, sometimes crossing several national borders. Right. And the European Commission decided at the outset to establish a methodology for calculating the churn rate of each hub by using as the denominator the physical consumption in its own market area, without including the then so-called transit volumes. This I refer to as the net churn. More recently, the gas target model document stipulated that gas is to be traded hub to hub rather than country to country. Therefore, in my opinion, it is more correct to calculate the churn rate of each hub using as the denominator the physical demand in its market area, as in future all gas delivered or passing through a hub could be traded there. I refer to as the gross churn. So I have used the net churn up until now in order to remain in line with the EU methodology, and also because for those few countries where the different calculations give quite different results, this did not really impact much on the final rankings. However, this year, I have decided to introduce the notion of gross churn in this comment and will in future publish that figure, as the gross churn methodology, I believe, is more accurate in showing a given hub's ability to be a pricing benchmark beyond its own market area. And that's what's important when looking at the real maturity of a hub.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And we'll come to that later on when we start comparing some of the Asian discussions as well. And by the way, you know, it sounded quite complex, but I'm sure it's not. It's all listed in your comment. If anybody wants to go and look at that, they can. But why do we specifically can't look at and focus on TTF for a minute, and specifically the supremacy of TTF, as you've titled your paper? Can you tell our listeners why we've seen such a huge increase in liquidity over the recent years?
Yeah, certainly. I mentioned earlier that NBP was the first traded gas hub in Europe, and it very quickly became a mature hub. It was used for hedging and risk management, by traders in the British Isles, but also continental European market participants, as there was no other liquid hub at their disposal. Gradually, as the Dutch TTF gained in liquidity and maturity, with a churn of 14 already back in 2011, it became more appealing to many of those continental European players to use a euro-denominated contract and therefore avoid any unnecessary currency risk. It took a few more years for the balance to change, but by 2017, TTF had surpassed NBP in total traded volumes and in both the net and gross churn rates also. Mm-hmm. In trading, liquidity begets liquidity. And once that growth path was set, it just continued.
It just continued on and on. But you know, from what you said, has the rise in TTF been mirrored by a fall in NBP?
For the very reasons that continental European players chose to hedge and risk manage at TTF, they no longer did so at NBP. And therefore, over a period of 5-6 years, it was about that sort of time frame. And you can see this by looking at the off-gem shipper trading lists. There, back in 2012-14, there were a raft of GmbH, SPA, SA companies listed. They're not there anymore. And that is because they're not trading NBP. They are risk managing at TTF. However, NBP does still have an important role to play as a sterling reference price.
Yeah. Interesting. Which is you know, not to, but that links on to my next question. You know, really about Brexit. You know, we can't have a podcast about Europe without Brexit, of course, can we, Patrick? So, has Brexit influenced NBP's decline as well?
David, I refuse to answer political questions. No, seriously. it's a very quick answer, really. As much as this is quite a difficult question to answer objectively, my view is that Brexit has not had and probably will not have a direct impact on NBP trading as such.
That's interesting. I'm surprised by that. But, well, we have to wait and see, of course. You know, we as I said, we're recording this on the 1st of June, and we've still got another 7 months, or no, 7 months to play out. Anyway, look, I'd like to talk about the other hubs in Europe, which you briefly referred to. But first, in your paper, you use 5 elements to compare the hubs. Now, we've discussed traded volumes and churn. Can you tell us about the other 3 that you've used and how important they are in calculating your rankings?
Yes, of course I can. Through an annual questionnaire that I send out to various market participants, I receive data regarding the number of different players who trade at least once per week at each of the hubs, in the spot and prompt contracts and in the mid to far curve contracts. Mm-hmm. The more active participants there are, the more liquidity there will be in a market, which is especially important in the mid to far curve for risk management trades. This is, I keep coming back to this because it's very important in defining not just the liquidity of a hub, but the maturity of a hub. What is it used for? It is used for hedging and risk management. I also analyze the absolute traded volumes in each of the product types, all along the curve from balancing, spot, prompt, months, quarters, seasons, and years. I also note whether there are any options or financial trades conducted. And together, these two metrics reveal whether a given hub is predominantly used for balancing in the spot, prompt, front month contracts, or for hedging and risk management in the mid, far curve and options, for example. The analysis this year reveals that there are more active participants on the TTF than on the NBP or NCG hubs, and significantly more than all the other hubs. TTF is also the hub on which the greatest number of product types are traded and in the greatest volumes. Another indication of that hub's maturity and a good indication that it is being used as a risk management hub. Yeah. And indeed, TTF has become the mature risk management hub, not just for the Netherlands, but for all of Europe and beyond, as it now also serves as a pricing hub for some LNG cargoes into Northwest Europe, for example.
Interesting.
Finalize, the tradability index, another metric, the fifth one, is a metric published by ICIS, which records the availability of bids and offers at each hub at two given bid offer spreads. In itself, I do not believe it can determine the maturity of a hub, but it is a useful metric to use in conjunction with the others.
Interesting. So let's just talk perhaps about some of the other hubs. So what about the French and the German hubs, you know? How active are they, you know? Yeah. Are they liquid enough to manage risk?
The way you finished that question, it now becomes harder to answer than if you had not said that.
That's why I asked it.
let's try anyway. Look, objectively, and it's all there in the results of my analysis, the two German hubs have performed rather disappointingly, let's face it, over the last decade, especially considering the size of their physical market. Germany as a whole is the largest physical gas market in Europe. You could assume that, therefore, any trading at those hubs should have the greatest volumes. It has not developed that way for a variety of reasons, which I don't think we've got time to go into right now. But despite a reasonable increase in 2019, let's just put this into perspective. The total traded volumes combined of NCG and Gaspool were still 3.5 times less than those at NBP and a staggering over 11 times less than those at TTF. I think that puts it into perspective.
And I imagine that Belgium, Italy and Spain are even worse than that, aren't they?
Let's do France first, because that's another big country. You did mention it in the previous question. And there was a lot of hope back in 2018. When they consolidated the various, there were many hubs, five originally, brought down to three, then two, and then finally in 2018 they created the Trading Region France. Yeah. So again, the idea there was to provide greater liquidity. That's certainly what the regulator anticipated, but in reality, the French TRF has followed a similar trajectory to the German hubs. And again, despite a reasonable increase in traded volumes in 2019, they're only slightly more than one quarter of those of Germany. TRF is still classified as a poor hub. Belgian hubs, especially the sterling price Zeebrugge, have struggled in a competitive market. They are rapidly losing ground in the European rankings. The decline of the Zeebrugge hub is attributable in part to it being priced in sterling, with most of its volumes coming from spreads with the NBP. And despite the virtual ZTP hub, which became operational in 2012, which helped to sustain the Belgian trade volumes a little, the two hubs are now ranked 8th and 9th, respectively, versus Zeebrugge alone still being ranked 5th in 2015.
Big drop. And yeah, do you think that Zeebrugge will change its currency? Do you think it could change its currency if it's priced in pence per therm or not?
Look, that was debated for months, years by Fluxys in the early 2010s. And that's why, rather than change the currency of Zeebrugge, they introduced the virtual ZTP, which is a euro-denominated contract. But as I say, although the volumes have increased a little at ZTP, it's just not enough to sustain to counter the fall in trading volumes at Zeebrugge.
So just to kind of finishing off quickly the discussion on the other countries in Europe, we've got Italy and Spain to address. And I'd also like to ask you about the Russia spy mix. So what are your views on each of those?
Well, on a positive note, having just told you all the negative stuff of France, Germany, France and Belgium, the Italian PSV is continuing the strong growth trend, which it started back in 2014, albeit from a low base. And it is now ranked equal fourth alongside the German gas pool, and therefore ranked as active. And that is really quite something in 5 years to have come up from the lowest hub in Europe to being fifth. It is the hub currently showing the most promise for further development and in time could become the reference hub for Southern Europe. The Spanish PVB is developing quite well since its inception, but it's still ranked 10th out of the 11 hubs analysed in detail. The emerging hubs are serving a purpose to facilitate balancing in their respective countries. They still have a long way to go on the path of maturity. Some are still at an early stage of development, and some because of various structural political issues limiting their growth. SPIMEX, you brought up the Russian SPIMEX, is not, strictly speaking, a hub. It's an exchange operating an electronic platform for some physical deliveries of gas from seller to buyer. It doesn't allow for retrading or non-physical trades. I don't count it at all as a price reference.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure there may be some people, particularly in Russia, who might disagree with you on that. But anyway, can we perhaps, because we talked earlier on about a comparator for the European hubs, can we discuss how their liquidity compares with global hubs? So if TTF is the most liquid hub in Europe, and though NBP, of course, is a close second, how does that compare with US Henry Hub and Asian LNG, JKM liquidity? What's the comparison?
Well, I developed a methodology over a year ago, early 2019, to try and determine the relative churn rates. Henry Hub, we know, has become the pricing benchmark in North America. TTF has become now the pricing benchmark for Northwest Europe, excluding the British Isles. And although not strictly speaking a hub, the JKM has become the pricing benchmark for LNG cargoes delivered into Asia, although it has been used to price LNG cargoes to other parts of the world as well. And NBP has been a Northwest European benchmark for over a decade. It's lost that mantle to TTF. However, it remains the pricing benchmark for the British Isles and also for some LNG cargoes destined for Europe. So to answer your question, TTF compares very well. The results of my analysis show that Henry Hub is the premier global gas benchmark with an impressive churn of over 45 times. There is no doubt this is a very mature, very liquid gas pricing benchmark. TTF, when compared to its main sphere of influence, which is France, Germany, Austria, Czech Republic, Benelux, has a very respectable churn of just under 17.9. There is no doubt that this is a mature and liquid gas pricing benchmark. The NBP, when compared to the consumption across the United Kingdom, Republic of Ireland, still has a churn of 13.4. It's a mature gas pricing benchmark. JKM is effectively still in its infancy as a price market, as the majority of the LNG imports into the four countries, China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, were until quite recently subject to oil price formation. However, the recent increase in large volumes of spot LNG cargoes have been traded invariably priced using the JKM price marker, or even traded as physical cargoes on the Platts market on closed platform. JKM is certainly becoming a reference price for LNG into Asia, but it's still classified as illiquid in that comparison compared to the other three global benchmarks.
Okay, so I buy that there's no JKM hub yet, but what would it take to have a meaningful hub price in Asia?
That's a little more difficult to answer, as Asia presents very different gas landscape to that in North America or Europe. Due to the high proportion of LNG in overall supplies, some countries relying solely on LNG imports, and I think that's why the Platts JKM is currently a front runner as a pricing benchmark. There have been other pricing initiatives, the Singapore market, the GLX trading platform. These haven't really attracted enough interest. However, I do foresee in the future a more standard, let's call it, gas hub as we know it, probably in mainland China, where there are already strong initiatives to effect that. In reality, though, I think that if JKM can continue its almost exponential rise over the next year or two, then it stands a very good chance of cementing its position as an Asian price market.
That's interesting. But do you see, and I think you do, from what you've said in this podcast interview, TTF, is it a European or is it a global price reference? What is it,
Patrick? Well, look, as I explained in the comment, it has now become both. It has been a European price reference for several years now. And more recently, it can be said to have become a global reference.
Yeah, interesting. Well, look, you know, Patrick, it's been great chatting to you, but I always like to end up with a kind of summary looking forward type of question. And we've discussed a lot of issues. One thing that's absolutely clear from this discussion is the huge depth of quantitative analysis you've done. The size of this spreadsheet must be huge, my friend. But anyway, so I'd just like to ask, where is this all going to end up? You know, will MBP's influence continue to wane? Will we see other hubs grow? What do you think is going to happen in the next few years?
Look, it's likely that MBP will continue to lose more traded volumes, but it should remain a sterling reference price for gas for the British Isles and possibly in a post-Brexit world, more generally too, if traders want to speculate on the sterling euro exchange rate. This used to happen a lot in the 1980s, for example, when there were various currency restrictions. Traders used commodity markets as a pseudo currency exchange mechanism. I can see that happening with gas in Europe because the gases will still flow freely physically. And anyway, we'll see. I've already indicated that the Italian PSV hub is growing well. I can see that continuing in the next few years. But, you know, as for the remaining European hubs, I suspect their relative rankings remain quite similar to today. The emergence of a few new hubs, such as the Baltic hub, which has just been established, and also a few others in the remaining member states left to comply with the gas directives.
Interesting. Well, look, fascinating discussion, Patrick. You know, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your time. And I really do urge our listeners to take the time because there are some great maps. And I love your charts and use a lot of colour, which is great. So I've really enjoyed our conversation. And just to remind you, the paper we're talking about today is the European Traded Gas Hubs, the Supremacy of TTF. And this can be downloaded at our website, www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. Patrick, again, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. And thank you and goodbye to everyone.